Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the NXT Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT, but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review last night's episode of NXT. Before we get into it, actually, Sid, just dealing with a news story that's coming out today about people getting kicked out of these NXT tapings because, well, they think they're working for a dirt sheet. What do you reckon to all that?
They had people in that building for years and years and years who spoiled the show. Whenever you tape a show, there will always be one fan, whether there's 10,000, 8,000, or in the case of Full Sail University, 400, or in the case of the CWC, about 300, I believe. There'll always be one who gives away the results. This never used to be a problem for them until one of two things happened, right? And you can be cynical, if you like. One, it moved to television. So the stakes of viewership are far more important. Mm-hmm. Or two, the quality of the show became pretty bland, is the generous term. Like, there are some great matches on NXT to this day. There are some great promos, or there were. Adam Cole's since left. But we all know the crack. It doesn't feel like an alternative in AEW Shadow. There's a lack of trust. There's a lack of direction. There's a lack of continuity as a result of the power plays going on in WWE right now. It just generally feels, and it's such a dismal atmosphere in CWC for so many different reasons. This show, and I think it's boring as hell sometimes, practically irrelevant, very cold. But I think the more generous consensus is, it isn't hot at the very least. And there's a little bit of a unpleasant vibe from the outside looking in at NXT right now. Back in the days of Full Sail University, and I remember a report in October 2019 where this was the first sort of indication that it just wasn't going to be the same anymore. Like, the wrestlers used to fraternize with the fans. They used to be like food trucks that they used to congregate around. And then instantly when it moved to TV, no, we're doing in-house catering, fan interaction is going to be limited, blah, 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 blah. So it just feels like this is a promotion at war with its fans for reasons I can't comprehend, because it's not fans' fault. It's Vince's fault. Kick him out, but I can't. So they are kicking the cat is the TLDR take on this recent spate of, like, the guy from JJ Williams, I believe his name is, from The Observer. He used to adore NXT, and he didn't just go to the tapings. Like, he was on the loop. Like, he considered himself like a chronicler, a historian of NXT. He was a huge part of the Full Sail atmosphere, and they booted him out. Like, come on. Like, that was a heel move from a brand that increasingly feels like a heel.
Mm.
Well, this was the post-TakeOver 36 episode of NXT, of course. What do you reckon on the whole?
There was some decent action. There was some storyline development. A nice conclusion. Two nice conclusions to two stories, in fact. It would be in bad faith or just a little bit moody to say that it was an outright terrible show, but oh, this is the general vibe of it feels as mundane and irrelevant as ever. I don't need a promo train on this program. There's been far more than people would be happy to admit, but this one in particular was just so... look, it's the same old 2021 NXT. Increasingly cold, bland, solid, minor league WWE wrestling. That's what this show was, irrespective of its quality, which was okay. The vibe continues to get worse and worse and worse. The feeling around it gets worse. The vibe the show projects gets worse. Phoned in. You get your first little glimpses of what could be considered directions now, and I'm thinking, this brand, for the first time, doesn't feel like it's got a takeover in it.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with what you say there, mate. I'd describe this as inessential, i.e., like you say, some really entertaining action on the show and some just generally entertaining stuff happening as well. And I think, you know, it's not the case of, I don't want to do this comparison. I hate saying, oh, let's compare NXT and AEW, but at the end of the day, WWE forced that comparison onto us at the start of the Wednesday Night Wars. So what I would say is, this is not, if you're doing a sliding scale, this isn't Monday Night Raw, whereas if I didn't have to watch Monday Night Raw as part of my job, I, without question, would not watch Monday Night Raw. I would maybe catch up, maybe watch a few clips online, but I wouldn't be sat there on a Tuesday morning, hop out of bed, right, time to watch Monday Night Raw. Dynamite, I would, if I didn't do it for my job, and for example, I know a lot of people do this, obviously, you, if you're in the UK, you'll wake up and it's happened the night before. You go to work and maybe avoid all spoilers and watch it. I'd watch it as soon as I get in, like Thursday evening, for example. I think I'm somewhere in between on that. Is I wouldn't necessarily mind if I got some things of NXT spoiled, and I would probably watch large swathes of this show. But like I say, it's not appointment viewing. And that is a reflection of what we've been talking about for the last few months, if not years.
Indeed. It's before we actually get to the show, I would probably have stopped watching this if I didn't cover it for a living. It doesn't have a unique selling point. It used to be come get genuinely best in the world tier pro wrestling, a notch below New Japan, but everything else in time, in history, was. You used to get state-of-the-art in-ring action, some of your favorite indie stars being treated respectfully and with conviction. You never got the best promos, that's just a WWE thing, but you got some nice, real feel-good moments. This brand offers nothing that so many other promotions do better. You see Josh Alexander's work on Impact and you think, do they even have the in-ring anymore? Certainly they don't have it in comparison to the peaks of AEW. They don't have the promos. They never will have the promos now that it's a publicly floated company that is now sort of an ambassador product of NBC. You don't get the white hot storytelling. I don't get anything from the show that I couldn't get elsewhere. It used to be the place where I'd say, all right, okay, well, you know, it's no longer the alternative it once was. But I love Adam Cole. I love Ever Rise. I started to love Thatcher and Ciampa. There was always stars that I liked on the show, but you're not even getting that anymore. This brand's, it's in trouble. I think it's hard to tell whether it's in trouble from a televised standpoint. I know we will talk about the show, and Christ, I don't want to talk about it longer than I need to. But like, is it, if this was the only thing WWE had for our network, would it be in trouble? The fact that Raw exists means no, absolutely not. They could probably take a two-hour time slot just to justify how popular Raw is on cable. But in itself, were it not for Raw, this would be in trouble as a TV show.
God, my opinion, Raw did over 2 million, by the way.
Oh, God, I know. I mean, ugh. How?
I'll say this. Do you remember in the good old days when I was still new at What Culture, wet behind the ears, and we'd sit down and talk about a takeover, and I'd sit with you two and promise I'm sort of watching weekly TV of NXT back when it was just on the network, and I'd never got bothered to get around to it. Probably what I would have done had that been the case now is I'd have watched Takeover and gone, well, that was fantastic. Tuned in this week and gone, cool, I'll see you in a few months, maybe the go-home show before the next Takeover. So I
think it's been a problem for forever, by the way. Like, I'm talking years before the war. One more thing before we actually get into it. Dave Meltzer reported, I don't look at it anymore, this section I do still subscribe. He used to report the top 10 network shows on any given week. Table for Three used to often beat NXT. Like, Table for Three used to routinely beat NXT. How good could it have been? Everyone used to performatively love the takeovers and earnestly, but kind of performatively at the same time. Because it's like, well, hang on, I'm hearing none of this on Thursday mornings or Thursday nights on Twitter. And yet people are talking about it as if it's some of the best pro wrestling ever. Saturday nights, yes, Wednesday nights, not for like a number of years.
Table for Three in the mud. You love to see it. All right, let's talk about this show because it started with the real star of NXT, and that is Cameron Grimes, baby, to the moon. He arrives with his $1 million championship and the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase. They've got the full red carpet treatment as they arrive in a limo and they walk out celebrating Grimes' victory at TakeOver 36. DiBiase cuts this lovely speech talking about why he came to NXT. He wanted someone to carry on the legacy of the $1 million man. That person would have to be strong of body and mind, but most importantly, strong in heart. He said, quitters never win, winners never quit. And he said, Grimes, you are no quitter. You got back up no matter how many times you fell down until you finally became $1 million champion. That is who you are now. Cameron Grimes, just a great promo he is. He says, talked about when he first interacted with Ted DiBiase and he drove him crazy. And DiBiase butted in saying, oh, just testing you. Grimes went on to say, look, he lost focus with all those zeros in his bank account. He thought it was something, but he didn't have that accomplishment that made him something. He talked about when he was cleaning trash and scrubbing toilets. And there was no way he was going to allow that dummy, LA Knight, to make the $1 million man his butler. So at TakeOver, they took care of LA Knight and he became the $1 million champion. And Grimes wondered, where do they go from here? And there's only one place to go. And together they shout, to the moon! And then they make it rain, as you sort of predicted on the preview yesterday, Sidge. Dollars rain down from the sky, but it's not real money, as Wade Barrett was keen to point out. It's dollar bills with Cameron Grimes' face on it. If anyone's got one of them, I'd really appreciate it if you could send it to What Culture Towers. It'll be pride of place on my desk. But they hug, and I thought this was a great opening to NXT. Lovely stuff, this.
Yeah, what I hate about it is that's contradicted everything I've just said, because this was really fun, long-term storytelling with like a feel-good bent. This is the closest NXT legitimately has come to restoring the soul of NXT that proved so fabulous in 2013, 14, 15. A long-term storyline that made silly stakes still feel like really quite nice. And it has a happy ending and the fans are made to feel feelings of happiness, dopamine, at the thing that they watch because the whole world's miserable and everyone needs an escape. It's a nice, neat little conclusion. It's a shame they weren't paid to be there because that would have made for a funny little joke. But I got the second prediction right later on in the broadcast, so I was happy enough with that. It's weird. I don't understand how Cameron Grimes doesn't come across as, you know, when like Gargano dresses up as friggin' Michaels and he sees photo shoots and it's like, stop jerking yourselves off. You just lost a war. You're in the mud and you're doing your poses in photo shoots as if you're still legends. Get better with a pen. Get better with a poking pen. Become legends once again and then you can get your little mark apprentices to dress up as you. It used to make me sick, that. absolutely sick. They're doing it as recently as 3 months ago, and it's like, you're dead. The brand is dead, and you're still sucking yourselves off, still sucking your own cacks. And yet, Cameron Grimes, because it's one of my least favorite things ever, because it's just a bit of fluff that they do to like get some attention. When they do, the stars of the D dress up as the stars of yesteryear, and you've got Shinsuke Nakamura and Sasha Banks doing The Undertaker. I'm thinking, do you think The Undertaker ever dressed up as Bruno Sammartino? He didn't, because the idea was he's going to appear as a superstar in his own right. Steve Austin didn't dress up as the Ultimate Warrior on a .com photo shoot because he wasn't a star. This stuff that they do makes them look like little geeks. And yet, it must be the power of his personality, the lovely detail and genuine wit of the storyline. But Cameron Grimes, legitimately, and this is such an enormous credit to him, doesn't feel like Johnny Gargano.
No, he's his own man. Like you say, he's aping the Million Dollar Man. He's got the jacket with the dollar signs on and all that. But yeah, like you say, I'm intrigued and worried where it goes from here with him. But I mean, for something where it could have just been, like you say, just a cheap knockoff, I think generally, especially tonight, I thought what they did, everything with this was absolutely perfect, both here and later on in the night. Next week, oh, I'm going to be very nervous to see what happens next. But in terms of giving him something to do rather than having him lose challenges for, I don't know, the North American Championship or something, I think they've done a great job with him. Having said that, as you were talking there, I was like, I would have loved to have seen Big Show dressed up as Bastian Booger, but maybe that's a thing for another time. Let's move on, because it was time for Timothy Thatcher versus Ridge Bloody Holland. And they had Pete Dunne, Tommaso Ciampa in their corners. And this went exactly the way we thought and hoped, I suppose, it went. And that was Timothy Thatcher, submission specialist, going for submissions. And Ridge Holland, big, hard bastard, battering him whenever he could get out of those submissions. Exactly what happened here. Thatcher's going for submissions. Holland gets back up to his feet early on and just floors Thatcher with a punch. Thatcher drops down, keeps going for these submissions, gets a back elbow from Holland, though. Thatcher's targeting Holland's leg, then targets an arm. And it looks like he's maybe got a bit of the advantage here. And Holland just takes his head off with a lariat. Later on, Thatcher catches him again in a half crab. Holland kicks out, gets up. Thatcher, bad idea this, Tim, slaps him, to which Holland blocks a kick, headbutts him, scoops him up, power slam, 1, 2, 3, clean as a sheet. Ridge Holland beats Timothy Thatcher. Big brawl breaks out after the match with Ciampa and Pete Dunne. Throws Dunne out of the ring. Ciampa gets hit with a sneak attack. And then here comes the returning Danny Burch. Great to see him back on TV. Oney Lorcan is helping him attack Ciampa as well. They continue. Burch lays out Ciampa with a big punch. And then Holland hits him with a headbutt. Holland goes to put his little cap back on when Thatcher comes in, but Dunne attacks him. That allows Holland to grab that club of his. He hits Thatcher in the arm. Dunne holds his arm out. He hits it again, and then he hits Thatcher in the throat, injuring Timothy Thatcher. They lay him out. They leave both Ciampa and Thatcher laid out. A real statement, this, for Holland, Dunne, Burch, and Lorcansage.
If I'm going to be nice about it, it doesn't really sound that nice, actually, now that the words are forming in my brain. This is precisely the sort of angle I will not give a single toss about until they're in the ring and it looks like someone's about to get their arm broken, because some of these guys are so great at locking in submissions. This is very few people, if any, in this storyline that is intensified on last night's NXT. Like, very few of them are like TV stars. They are not TV stars at all. This is okay. Some of the different permutations of the match combinations should be fire in the ring. Again, just a very sweeping sort of bland quality to all of this. But like, you don't want to praise things as like, you want to feel things. You want to think, oh, Timothy Thatcher's doing a pretty tremendous job with Ridge Holland here, because you know how green he is. He's guided him through a match of not inconsiderable length. without any glaring hesitation spots, moments where they are trying to get on the same wavelength or Thatcher's guiding him through. Thought it was just solid. But because of Holland's got a character and he's being told to do these things, and it's fine. It didn't feel like a total pro, and it isn't. This is the NXT now. It didn't feel like a total pros match where one big hard bastard is like just smacking. I mean, did, but like it didn't crackle with the electricity of two pros working this story. It felt like Thatcher was very subtly and very well, I might add, like guiding him through this type of match. Great individual performance from Thatcher when you look at it from a perspective of the job he's doing, but that's not what I watch a wrestling TV show at all for.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of like schizophrenic with it all in terms of, I mean, maybe we'll do an entire podcast about this over the weekend, talking about the future of NXT with it being reshaped and what have you, in terms of working out what is this brand? Is it, you know, is it Monday Night Raw or SmackDown Lite? Or is it, like you say, purely for developmental? And it's just the case that you get to watch some of these matches and then maybe, you know, tie in some storylines with it. But I thought they did a great job working together. And I thought in terms of establishing Huidun and his gaggle of bastards again, I thought it did a great job. And yeah, never nice to see someone injured and taken off TV, obviously in kayfabe and what have you, but a real impactful thing, this. We got a lovely couple of interviews throughout this show with the two finalists in the NXT breakout tournament. First was Carmelo Hayes. Nice sort of reminder of the story that's happened prior to this, the road that he's been on, building him up and setting him up for the match later on. And they did the same with Odyssey Jones later. So it wasn't like in the previous rounds where they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's really interesting. And then here's this guy. He's going to be fighting as well later. Enough of that. Not bad, though. But back to this guy. What about this? And then we found out in a backstage interview with Indi Hartwell and Dexter Lumis. Indi, of course, did all the talking. Mackenzie Mitchell asking them about when the wedding is. Sige, get your tux sorted for the 14th of September, the Index wedding. I can't wait.
It'll be fun. The thing is, WWE in weddings, even when WWE is rubbish in the 2000s, they got bloody wedding spot on. This is their absolute bread and butter, which is weird because it's the second W in WWE stands actually for wrestling, not weddings, but this kind of stuff. World Wedding Entertainment, like this is their bread and butter. Big angle, big daft spectacle. I expect it to be done really, really well. The Lana Lashley wedding was abysmal, but that's Raw for you. NXT still a notch above. Yeah, this should be good. I'm not wearing a suit for the podcast.
They'll never know. What was the last good wrestling wedding we had? Because like
it wasn't the AEW one, I'll tell you that for now.
No, Ford Sabian wasn't good. Like you say, Lana Lashley wasn't good. That's no.
There was a great one in TNA. I forget who it was. It was for Chelsea Green. The last good WWE wedding, Daniel Bryan AJ with his white suit.
Oh, was that Raw 1000? Did you see how close we are to Raw 1500? I thought Raw 1000 was about 3 years ago or something in my head.
Oh, God. Raw 1000 is 2012.
I know.
God. I could do without watching Tatanka.
That's about to say Tatanka.
I could really do without watching, even for the 5 seconds these things last, I could do without watching Tatanka hanging around with Carlito, Ted DiBiase, and Rolodex, Kelly Kelly.
And tell you what, when we've got a free weekend, maybe not me and you. No, maybe me, you and Hamflet. I'll tell you what we'll do, because I've just Googled this. According to Reddit anyway, 21st of February next year is Raw 1500. What we're going to do is we'll book bits that we think would actually be good. And then I'm going to bring in a big jar with legends' names in, and I'll draw out three, and you have to book a backstage segment with them. How about that?
Yes, I'll happily do that. It'll be better than the show.
I mean, it's exactly what they do in WWE, isn't it? Just like, are you free? Right, yeah, we'll work something out. But it feels like, and this is, you know, we're not going to try and, I'm going to try, sorry, and avoid all the spoilers for the NXT tapings over the next few weeks. But with what, 3 episodes of NXT, including the wedding, it feels like an open goal to do Hendu next week, Stag Do the week after, and then the wedding, surely. But then that's just sensible booking from us.
Absolutely. Still annoyed that AEW didn't do a Stag Do. You could, the worst thing about watching that wedding with Sabian and Ford and all that stuff is like, as it was approaching, you could tell that already your character's cooked. We need to course correct and do something big with it. So they just didn't bother doing any fun stuff because they thought, well, this isn't fun. I'd rather have the Redeemer than a Stag Do, if I'm being honest. But all of this on NXT should be good because with all the greatest will in the world, Dexter Lumis isn't going to become as good as Miro. So the know his lane.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Right, let's return to the action on NXT because then we got a tag match. It was Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter versus Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. Apparently, Carter and Catanzaro do TikTok dances now. Sid and I are far too old to understand any of this, so I'm just
WWE.
I'm just annoyed that they don't do tout dances. So Catanzaro got a lot of heat. We got Carter coming in, running wild after getting the hot tag. And then quite quickly, they hit that amazing finish reverse where Carter hits a neck breaker whilst Catanzaro does a 450 splash. Love that finish. Catanzaro pins JC Jane. And post-match, they yell about getting a tag team title shot, which I'd quite like to see, Sig.
Yeah, bro. Sorry, I'm yawning. They're bad baby faces, Carter and Catanzaro. Such a like a little nah disposition about them. Not very likable. Flashy moves, yes. Like when they were like sort of doing their taunts, it was like, oh Christ. Get awesome conging. Stab these two in half. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't think they radiated any particularly great babyface qualities. They've been working tag matches at least 2 years before there was division. Like, even in the midst of the war, it's like, oh, these two, all right. They, like, appear every 4 weeks and just do a match for no reason. So for me to take them seriously as tag team title contenders is going to take a gargantuan bit of booking, the likes of which this brand isn't capable of. If you want to be really cold and analytical, because there are reviewers out there on the wrestling internet who'll go, solid. I can see some directions coming out of this. That doesn't automatically make it good. This is the bare bones of what you should be doing on episodic wrestling TV. Yeah, some really good stuff happening with Mandy Rose in the aftermath of this. I've got no complaints. Well, I do because it's boring. at the very least, because I thought, very questionable. We've had vignettes for both of these women. Gigi Dolin's just win, which is your first indication of, right, okay, I've been told to trust the direction mapped for this character. Oh, he is a winner. Cool, I'll pay attention. And then the pot, and then the lose. But at least there seems to be a storyline purpose. But I don't care about that. I can't in good conscience. Like, what has happened to pro wrestling over the past however many years when it's like, there's a direction stemming from this. Goody, you can watch any show on telly and think, all right, that's a plot line. Of course there is. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching, having a something on Netflix. Yeah, it's good. That character, something's happening with them next week. Of course it is. Me, man, wrestling reviewers on the internet, like, bow down.
Yeah, it is a low bar. I think the best thing you can say is, yeah, you can see Catanzaro and Carter becoming tag team champions, but that's only because you've got two tag team champs right now who can't coexist, and it'd be a nice sort of, you know, oh, plucky baby faces challenging for the titles, but in reality, the only reason they win them is because Io Shirai and Zoe Stark can't get along. We got a backstage interview with NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez. She put over Kaylee Ray quite nicely here. She talked about a match with Dakota Kai, basically inferred that maybe it's not over. It is. It probably is. She's going to the main roster, hopefully, and in my opinion, hopefully getting a title reign. But who bloody knows, considering what's going on with her and Aaliyah and main event and all that. So she talks about Kaylee Ray. She puts over her whopping NXT UK Women's Championship reign. And then she's interrupted by one Frankie Monet, who challenges Gonzalez to a title match and basically says she's going to be the one to take the title off her. I just love Robert Stone's just hanging about in the background. Can't believe he's riding these coattails, basically.
Sorry, so I completely blanked.
In terms
what's the next bit I'm talking about?
The Frankie Monet interrupting and challenging Raquel Gonzalez.
Oh, Christ almighty. That's not a good direction at all. I'm sorry, it just absolutely isn't. I will put over what they did with Kaylee Ray. They did three separate good things. That's what they should do, but I thought it was done well. They had the champion put over the emerging threat. The video package made her look like a star, which is genuinely impressive because she's in NXT UK. And the squash match, while utterly regulation, the fact that they could have just done a squash, or they could just have a got beat like they did with Ilya Dragunov. They put minutes into this, which I received as an indication of they think Kaylee Ray versus Raquel Gonzalez is going to be a big, good match. So I'm on the hook for it. Actually,
yeah, me too. That came afterwards. After this, well, there was the interview with Odyssey Jones, putting him over ahead of the tournament final, of course. And then, yeah, Kaylee Ray defeated Valentina Ferroz. Ferroz got a tiny bit of offense in, it's fair to say, but it was Kaylee Ray battering her in her and then hitting her with a gory bomb. And like you say, just really establishing her as a threat on NXT. Good stuff. Great to see her doing well on NXT. And then this was the bit with Gigi Dolin and JC Jane being approached by Mandy Rose, who said, if you never want to feel like this again, come with me. They've really not done anything with Mandy Rose.
And Mandy Rose, to my recollection, hasn't really managed anyone. She's not Ricky Steamboat. So, I mean, even in canon, I don't think she's held any titles. So if you want to be, I'm not being mean about a level of work rate. And she did some all right stuff with Sonya Deville, actually. But like, some dickhead on Reddit was like, on Reddit, I remember, I think it was 2019, was like, she debuted the V-Trigger. It wasn't a bad one. It was like, Buddy Rose has got a pretty decent version of the V-Trigger. Is it almost as good as Kenny Omega's? Look, squared circle, then now forever. What I'm getting at is this is a not convincing development, Adam Wilborn.
Wasn't she part of the submission sorority or whatever it was with Paige and that lot? So she clearly learned from that incredibly successful stable to where she is today. What's that noise you can hear? Woo-hoo! It's time for a promo train, ladies and gentlemen. Samoa Joe comes out. He's, of course, the first three-time NXT champion. He said it's time for a celebration, but he didn't come to celebrate. He said there's tension in the air tonight. It's palpable. The handshakes backstage are colder. The stairs are a bit bolder. Who is going to step to Joe? Well, the first person was Boy John, who came out and said, Joe, you're not the baddest around. He said, go and find William Regal. He can make the match right now. I'll bat you for that NXT championship. Out comes LA Knight to interrupt them. He says, Nighttime every day is the right time, with or without the title. He is the only million-dollar megastar. He is going to be Joe's first and last challenger because he's going to take the title off him. He goes to get in the ring. I did like this from Pete Dunne. He basically said, you take one more step into this ring, I'll break every single one of your fingers. And all Knight could say was, all right, well, use your inside voice. Out comes Cool Cal O'Reilly, who talked to about Samoa Joseph, Peter Dunne, and La Knight, and basically said he'd earned a title match, winning the undisputed finale and shot on LA Knight's vest. But before he could get to saying how much he respected Joe and wants to challenge him for the title, Ridge Bloody Holland jumps Kyle O'Reilly. Ciampa comes in and attacks Pete Dunne, who was trying to do a little bit of a sneak attack before he got caught by the champ Joe. Out comes Holland comes down to help Pete Dunne in attacking Ciampa, and Joe batters LA Knight and stands tall as the NXT champion. Sid, your thoughts on all of this?
Absolutely bloody wretched. Absolutely bloody wretched garbage sub-main roster. Why am I making the bloody comparisons as if NXT is any different? Oh, what a load of old rubbish. Of course this is going to happen. They've got nout, man. They don't know
it
how
to literally breathe. What we did yesterday, just bouncing ideas around. We're like, who's going to be next for Joe? I don't know. Pete Dunne, Kyle O'Reilly, LA Knight. Yeah, just send them all out there.
I will be half nice. Clearly, they've done a lot of work in trying to do the transition. I've talked about this at length. Cross to Joe to call by way of Joe interacting with and having conflict and tension with both Cross and Cole. This was the direction. It was a direction. Now the direction's gone because they've suddenly caught wind of the fact that they didn't know how long they had Adam Cole for when he's the only guy on this brand who moved the needle. Ridiculously incompetent morons. So now you get a promo train. And the thing is, this is so bad. Not only the trope, the format, the lack of credibility behind storyline developments, LA Knight. It's not just failing upwards. You've lost a toy, effectively. Like, you've lost something that doesn't matter. It's not like you've lost the North American title and you're challenging for the world. It should be bad enough. It's like he's the million-dollar champion. It's been a comedy storyline. So the worst things about this segment were the fact that I hate promo trains, the fact that the dialogue was rubbish, the fact that this is totally creatively bankrupt. There were three men involved in this, right? Of the three, two had no claim to a title match whatsoever. And even if they don't get it, the fact that it was put into my head that they might, stupid, illogical. Of the three, one person is pretty much without a ranking system, clearly the number one contender, and that's Kyle O'Reilly. The not ideal bit about this is that the guy who actually has a claim to the title, I never want to hear cut a promo ever again. Kyle O'Reilly is one of the best in-ring workers in the world. He's unbelievable. I get the distinct vibe from him when he's not on television that he's a hell of a nice guy. And when he's a heel, he popped me. As a babyface, the top babyface potentially on this brand, he isn't popping me one goddamn iota. I used to cringe my arsehole inside out when I was 14 and happy to accept anything. I didn't have a discerning bone in my body when it came to pro wrestling because all of it's great. You're 14 years old. Get in, you get Jericho, you get Rock, you get Austin, you get Sable. You know, even back then, when Chris Jericho would call Kurt Angle Kirk Angel, I thought, oh, that's rubbish. Chris Jericho's lad's class. Wish you wouldn't say that. That's rubbish. La Knight, Pete Dunne, Joseph, your patters, crap, pal. Yeah. You are not coming across as this cool, casual guy who's got like an irreverent sense of humor. You sound like a tit. Mm. I don't know what the solution is. Potentially the solution is get him out of the WWE system. But that's the solution to everyone's problems, it would have seemed. Oh my God. Kyle O'Reilly sucks. I never wanted to say that. Mm. It genuinely breaks my heart to say that, but give him better material, or if this is his own material, give him material.
Yeah, no. Cheers for that sludge stick. Right, Cameron Grimes and Ted DiBiase are leaving. They're going to the limo. And Grimes did, as we suggested, he said, look, I think
as I suggested. As I suggested.
I mean, I'd never take any title off Cameron Grimes. But he said, I think it's time. You should take the $1 million championship. He hands it to Ted DiBiase through the window. But Ted goes, no. Now, you know what? I think you should still have this, Cameron. Look, every time you look at this belt, you'll know who you are as a result. And Grimes was like, wow, thanks for that, Ted. But this belt feels a little different. Realizes, turns it over. It's a replica belt. Ted DiBiase has tricked him one final time. He laughs. He speeds off. That damn DiBiase. A perfect bow on this storyline.
Yeah, this is really actually sweet. Really genuinely quite sweet, this. And this is how it all started. A nice circular thing with the alignment shifted. Nice little one last DiBiase. This has been very good. It really has.
Yeah, really good stuff. Kyle O'Reilly's backstage. He's getting asked about what just happened out there. When Vink, there's Vink, Duke Bloody Hudson. He comes in. He says, oh, you're up there, Kyle? Looking to be beat up. I just saw you bloody panhandling for a title. So before he can get that out, Kyle O'Reilly slaps the taste out of his mouth. There's a big pull-apart brawl to set up a match down the line between the two of them, which will be good. It's like you say, promos to what is one thing. Kyle O'Reilly in a ring, especially with someone who's developing like Duke Bloody Hudson, I'm looking forward to that.
I'm not. It's one of those things. I don't think about NXT at all during the week. Bit of a bust babyface on dying brand Kyle O'Reilly versus halfway promising developmental prospect. I don't care. So much of my time gets occupied by big league pro wrestling. I can't care about this. And realistically, several thousand viewers can't either.
I did enjoy what came next. It was the finals of the NXT breakout tournament. Odyssey Jones versus Carmelo Hayes. And it's your classic big man, little man match. You know, they're very respectful of each other, but Odyssey Jones can just hoy Carmelo Hayes around. But Carmelo Hayes is incredibly athletic, talented, and uses his quickness to avoid, getting battered all over the ring, basically. At one point, he's trying to put down Jones. He's nailing him with strikes, hits a Lemistica, hits a face buster, gets a two count, and then goes for something else. And Jones just nails him with a shoulder breaker. Hayes comes off the top rope with a flying leg drop, but he just can't put Odyssey Jones down. Goes for a second one, but Jones moves out of the way. Jones hits a big old splash on Hayes. Looks like he's got the match and the tournament won. There's a very casual cover, counting along with the referee. Hayes quickly reverses crucifix pin. 1, 2, 3. Carmelo Hayes shocks the world, defeats Odyssey Jones, wins the NXT breakout tournament, celebrates with a contract on the ramp for a title shot of his choosing whenever he wants it, for whatever title he wants. And he says he hasn't decided yet who he wants to face, but celebrates winning the tournament. I think this has been a great showcase for both of these men.
This is the highlight of the show. I thought it was really, really well done. Really impressed by Carmelo Hayes' in-ring work again. He is the more experienced and more talented performer. But nothing to take away from Odyssey Jones. But from what we've seen of Odyssey Jones, it's like, Christ, he's almost botched disastrously in like a 3-minute match. He just didn't know what to expect. Thought he played his role well, but the match was built around virtually everything that Carmelo Hayes did. And I thought he did a commendable job of that. But not to, bury Odyssey Jones, who's clearly got enormous potential, both as a wrestler and a star, which is the most important thing. That shoulder breaker looked deadly. Love that. Love the idea of an absolute colossus of a man. This is so simple. This speaks to the 6-year-old in all of us. An absolute colossal figure of a man pulling off a cool move that looks like it's really hurt someone. just that's what NXT is going to be. Yes, fine. You'll probably get younger viewers who are actually interested in the product doing that. And the results, if you chart it, he's beating all the big lads. That really doesn't get him over. No one's talking about Kamala Hayes. That's the problem. But maybe it's an NXT problem. But, you know, they've done everything they can so far to really put Carmelo Hayes over as like a gutsy babyface. And this brand needs one because there is a deficit of them.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do next with both of these guys. Massive congratulations to Carmelo Hayes winning that. What we got next was a squash match, just not the way we were anticipating.
What was this?
So they set up beforehand, there's going to be another Tian Sha match. Boa, of course, is the leader of that now. Xia Li not being involved in it at all. And the 1,000-year-old Dragon Lady's on the ramp. Boa dominating. He gets distracted by Miying standing up and, you know, telling him, kill him, effectively. Turns around and, I'm going to butcher this name, Zion Quinn, I believe it was, just smashes him in the face with his forearm and pins him. Beats Boa in a couple of minutes, goes to leave. The Dragon Lady's on the ramp, so he just jumps over the barricade and leaves a different way. And they've given up on this stable, haven't they?
What is going on? The amount of minutes I've spent cumulatively talking about this from when they were getting tortured in a garage with water to the teasers, to the squashes, the amount of investment they've placed in this. And Xia Li's in that weird purgatory between NXT and the main roster. Like, Theory's there. Xia Li's there. Alea's there. Dakota Kai's going to be there. This company doesn't know its arsehole from its elbow. The arsehole bit on this evidence must be NXT because they're stunk. Like, what on earth was this?
I don't know.
Can Tian Sha coexist? Oh, my God. He's in total control of a guy whose name escapes me, which tells you all about how often this guy's appeared on television. What's her name? The dragon lass?
Miying, I think.
Miying. Signals, right. Do the kill shot. Does he have to be told to do his finish every time? What kind of absolute amateur hour is the performance center if he has to be instructed to do his finish? Unfathomable the amount of resource and time that's gone into this for it to become this. It's never been over. They did the big, oh, she's going to stand up. No one gave her sauce at one of the takeovers, I think it was. This is so dead.
Didn't they give her mist the other week as well?
She had mist. She's stood up. When she stands up.
I love that as a checklist. We've tried everything. Mist, stood up.
I couldn't believe what I was watching here.
No, dead in the water. Let's move on. Let's talk instead about Johnny Gargano and annoying his like, this dad.
I just need to say one thing. When people say, since you're really miserable about NXT on these podcasts, I think it's a solid 7.5 out of 10 show every single week. Is it? Because I wasted my time talking and thinking about this. And I remember.
Yeah, let's move on and talk about Johnny Gargano annoying his dad. Did enjoy him saying that William Regal was an unspoken member of the family where there's a William... There's a way.
I pop my tits off that little idiot. He's got it in him, Johnny Gargano. Right? I'll give him that.
And they argue about the pronunciation of bananas, back and forth. And then felt very bad for Regal in amongst all this, because in amongst arguing with that annoying arsehole, love him, but that's what he's playing. In comes LA Knight. What's going on? This is outrageous. I want Joe sort of thing because of what happened earlier on in the night, to which Regal understandably kicks them out of his office, shuts the door and just goes, what a bunch of bloody buffoons.
I mean, Johnny Gargano's been going to be a top heel by all accounts. Can you not make him seem like he's a serious guy at this point? It's fun for what it is, but it's not main event level stuff.
No. He's going to maybe rediscover a dark side.
Starting to like the dark. Oh, God.
Promo from Bivins. As Diamond Mine training in the background, Roderick Strong's doing a masterclass with some national champions, and Bivins announces he's going to do an open challenge on Tuesday, next week's NXT, to prove to Kushida and the world what a champion he is. More Bivins on TV, Sige.
Yes, good. But again, look what happened to Diamond Mine? I wish I was talking about Diamond Mine the other week. You can't invest in this. This new NXT, if it wasn't like really engaging and sort of electrifying in terms of how it made you feel, you don't even know what to think about it anymore. You can one of the two lads on 205 Live, Ikem and Jiro, or the other one that's left. I don't even know who it is. What's the guy called actually? One looks a bit scruffy. One of them too. You know, he hates wrestling heavyweights who are actually smaller than him, and Ilya Dragunov, so it has to be a cruiserweight. They're not signing any more cruiserweights because Nick Khan's literally told you they are past the indie guys thing. So there's no more indie guys coming in. Nick Khan has told you this, and there are two members of the 205 Live roster. It's going to be one of them too. How can I get jazzed about Uber Challenge, you think? Ooh, class return from injury. You know, a promotion that actually acknowledges other promotions. Oh, you might get a forbidden door opening. Oh, you might get the two people left on the 205 Live roster page. Like, how could I possibly give a toss about this?
I'm just looking forward to Monday Night Raw becoming 4 hours long, Sige.
I'll quit. Do you understand me? I will quit.
Right, main event time is Hit Row. Isaiah Swift's got the North American champion, Ashanti the Adonis, and Top Dollar versus El Legado del Fantasma, Santos Escobar, Raul Mendoza, and Joaquin Wilds. I've been looking forward to this for a while. And it's a thrilling main event. We had, mainly Swerve leading the charge for Hit Row. Eventually, especially during the ad break, he gets beaten down, fights back. Hot tag to Top Dollar, who just looked like a wrecking ball in amongst all this. Cleans house, and he gets all three of them either on his shoulders or holding them up, and hits a mad triple fall away slam. Love that. Ashanti the Adonis comes in. Raul Mendoza recovers for Legado del Fantasma, hits him with a springboard missile dropkick, modified Michinoku driver, gets a near fall off that. Scott breaking up the pin with a house call on Mendoza. And then we get the moment. It is Scott and Escobar, and Scott hits him with a leaping flatliner and hits him with a 450 for a great near fall. So they try to stop Swerve, but the rest of Legado del Fantasma get taken out by Top Dollar, diving onto the outside. Escobar trips up Scott on the apron, but whilst he's on the outside and the referee's distracted dealing with Swerve, B-Fab sends Escobar into the ring post when who should appear but Electra Lopez. B-Fab and Lopez square off, and Lopez reveals she's got a bloody pipe, just like B-Fab had the other week. Nails her with the pipe. That distraction allows Escobar to roll up Scott for a 1-2-3. He has pinned the North American champion. What did you think of the main event, Sige?
It's pretty good, this. Pretty good. I think it was structured nicely to create drama, to showcase Top Dollar, who, when he's in this context, performs well above his limitations because he only has to do the stuff that he's good at. Swerve Scott is so great. That little moment when he was trying to get the hot tag, but he wasn't quite close enough. So like he slithered around, I think it was Joaquin Wild, and then did it like a, I don't know what the heck. Swerve Scott is so creative that he does things that I can't really like name or coin.
Yeah.
It's basically a hot tag, but like outwitting his opponent to get to it. He was great in this match. The last few minutes were class, bit of storyline development with the new addition to Legado del Fantasma. I would not have pinned Swerve Scott. If Escobar pins Adonis or Top Dollar, he can still, in my opinion, lay claims. You don't have to beat a champion. That's not how it works, in fact. You should do anything but do that. He can still say, beat one of your boys, surely I'm next at that title. Because as a fighting babyface champion, Swerve Scott would surely want to say, right, okay, we've lost this battle, but I want to win the war.
Mm-hmm.
Where it matters for this title, because that's what the core of this rivalry is all about. But NXT can't book, so there you go. But without hitting the heights of the trios genre, this is really nicely done.
Absolutely. I'm going to disagree with you. I think it was the right call to have Escobar pin him, because you've got the already pre-established story of whenever they faced off for a title, Escobar, by hook or by crook, beat Swerve. And yeah, that's going to hopefully be the storyline going into what should be a match that they give a whole bunch of time to.
I totally forgot they feuded about that ages ago.
Yeah. I think there is a storyline there. And these two in a ring, I will happily watch that for an entire sodding episode of NXT compared to what some of the stuff they just hoy on telly on Tuesday nights. But let us know your thoughts on that main event, on the future of the North American Championship, and everything we have discussed on today's show on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, the daily wrestling podcast, including, of course, our AEW Dynamite preview coming later on today, featuring CM Punk. That should get some more listens. This has been the NXT review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.